Hello, everyone, and welcome to Homicide Hot Dish, where you get your scoop of true crime. I'm your host, Brittany. Now, unfortunately, I don't have a new hot dish recipe to share with you. I haven't made a new one recently. So instead, I'm going to share one of my favorites with you again. In Minnesota, we call this hot dish the king of all hot dishes. It's Tater Tot Hot Dish. So check out our Facebook page, Homicide Hot Dish, for that recipe. Now, I do want to give a little disclaimer for this episode. There are a couple occasions where I use curse words, but it's only when I'm quoting someone, and it's really only a couple times, so listener discretion is advised. Now, on to the homicide. Domestic violence is something that happens all too often, and unfortunately, in this case, a young mother falls victim to it over and over again. And not only that, but she seems to be stuck in a love triangle that ends in murder. This is the murder of Jessica Goble. Jessica Goble was born on March 3, 1988 in Aberdeen, South Dakota. She had an older sister named Shannon who she was inseparable with. The two were best friends. According to an episode of Raw Terror, Shannon recalls how they would do everything together. They would sit in Jessica's room and talk, play video games, and just hang out. Her and Jessica would even drive the back roads and smoke cigarettes because no one would see them. Their aunt Billy says, quote, "Jessica and Shannon were always together. They did everything together," end quote. According to that episode, when Jessica was just 16 years old, she fell in love with a man who was a little bit older than her, and at just 18 years old, she ended up pregnant. Jessica's sister Shannon says Jessica was just so happy, and she gave birth to a baby boy named Preston. Jessica, her boyfriend, and their baby boy Preston lived together in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And a couple years later, Jessica turned 21. And her sister Shannon says this is when Jessica changed a little bit. But as any other 21-year-old would, she starts to go out a lot more, but she started hanging out with different people. And according to her aunt Billy, it was people that her boyfriend, the father of her child, probably didn't want her hanging out with. Jessica and her boyfriend started to argue a lot more than usual, and eventually they broke up. So Jessica ends up moving out and into her own place. Now there's a bar in Aberdeen where Jessica and her sister Shannon would frequent. It was called The Zoo. Shannon says, quote, "When me and Jessica would go to the zoo, we would dance and talk to a bunch of people that we knew, just hang out. Going to the zoo bar back in 2009, I didn't realize how much that would change our lives," end quote. One day, back in 2009, Jessica and Shannon go to the bar to have a good time. At one point, Shannon ends up going to the bar to get a drink. While she's there, she meets a man named John Heminger. He's a construction worker, and she thinks he's really nice, really funny. He keeps making her laugh. A week later, Shannon invites John over to hang out. And Jessica also comes over. Shannon describes Jessica and John meeting for the first time as love at first sight. They immediately start dating, and Shannon thought John and Jessica were perfect for each other. Jessica seemed very happy, and it seemed that John treated her the way a man should treat a woman. He always made Jessica smile, and they were inseparable. Something that Jessica's family didn't know about John was that he had quite the criminal past. It seemed to start in May of 2000 when he was only 18 years old. According to Aberdeen News, John was charged with aggravated assault and child abuse. He was sentenced to 30 days in jail and 90 days probation. At the time this incident occurred, he had a 4-month-old son, and he was at a residence and he shoved the mother of his child, and then he hit a second woman who was actually holding his child at the time. After he hit that woman for the first time, she ended up dropping the baby. And a man who was also at the residence pulled John off of the woman and took him home. In another incident that occurred in November of 2001, he ended up facing attempted murder charges. He and another man had gotten into a fight and he actually ended up stabbing the guy in the back with a knife. John was sentenced to 7 years in prison and was released in June 2009. And again, 2009 is when him and Jessica meet and start dating. But John and Jessica were so happy and so in love, everything seemed to be going great for Jessica. But then, suddenly, something changed in her behavior. She started to seem depressed, she wasn't smiling anymore, and her sister Shannon says sometimes Jessica would just call her crying, which isn't like her. Then, in 2012, Shannon moves in with John and Jessica. Shannon says when she moved in, she could tell something was wrong. They were acting in a way that made her think there was definitely something going on between them. John had changed. He was becoming more aggressive and seemed to be controlling of Jessica. He wouldn't let her wear makeup. She couldn't wear perfume. She had to be home at a certain time. He was definitely trying to control her. Jessica and her aunt Billy worked together, and Billy recalls one day in particular that Jessica came to work. She says, quote, "She came to work one day, she had sunglasses on, and I told her to take them off, and she had a black eye. And I said, 'Where'd you get that from?' And she said, 'It was John,'" end quote. And unfortunately from there, things seem to get more violent. Shannon ends up finding her own place and moves out of John and Jessica's. And she says, quote, "When I moved out of Jessica's house, things got worse for Jessica. She told me I should have never moved out, but I told her that I can't always be there to fight your battles. You need to start fighting back," end quote. John and Jessica ended up having an on-again, off-again relationship, and court documents show that John was arrested on April 30th, 2012, for simple domestic assault against Jessica. He was released on bond on May 1st, 2012, and his release included a condition that he have no contact with Jessica. He completed a domestic abuse program, and the no-contact order was lifted on June 8th, 2012. Now, John and Jessica had a daughter together, and I believe this was actually close to the time that Jessica was going to give birth. Then, over 2 years go by, and John and Jessica have another daughter together. Things must not have really changed in the relationship, I mean John being controlling and abusive towards Jessica, because Jessica starts to see someone else in the beginning of December 2014. Now, she's still sort of on and off again with John at this time, but eventually she does call it quits with him. This other man that she starts seeing is named Richard Hanley. When Jessica's sister Shannon meets Richard for the first time, she was actually pretty leery of him. She had heard that he'd gone to jail, but she wasn't sure what it was for. Shannon tells Jessica she thinks it's best for her to just wait a while to start dating anyone, just get her life together, and then worry about a relationship. Shannon then becomes suspicious of Richard even more, and I think for good reason. According to the Raw Terror episode, she says, quote, "Jessica asked me how I felt about her moving away with Richard. I don't know why Richard would want to move somebody away from friends and family. I personally think he just wanted to do whatever he wanted with her and not have anybody around," end quote. But then John comes back in the picture, and it's because he assaulted Jessica again. He was arrested on December 9th, 2014, just a couple days after Jessica started dating Richard. He is arrested for domestic simple assault again and released the next day on bond. He was again ordered to have no contact with Jessica, and then, just 2 weeks after that happened, he was in trouble yet again. On December 22nd and 23rd, he violated that no contact order and was now facing charges of vandalism. He had allegedly damaged a window on Jessica's car. He appeared in court for a bond hearing on December 24th and posted bond and was released on December 31st. Now again, Jessica had a no-contact order on John, but it seems even with this in place, there was still something going on between the two. According to her sister Shannon, she says John would go over to Jessica's while Richard wasn't there. He would tell Jessica they can work things out and that he still wants to be with her. But then, on January 6, 2015, just 6 days after John was released for violating that order, something happens that will change the lives of Jessica's family forever. Shannon says the day before, on January 5th, her and Jessica spent the day together. They watched movies with the kids, and then Shannon walks Jessica to her car and they say their goodbyes. This was the last time Shannon ever got to wave goodbye to her sister. The next day, January 6, 2015, at 6:06 p.m., Jessica makes a call to 911. She immediately gives the dispatcher her address and just says, "Send someone here immediately." The dispatcher asks her what's going on, and she says there's a fight. So he asks her, well, who's fighting? And it sounds like she's talking to her daughter, but you can't quite tell what she's saying. So the dispatcher asks again, "Ma'am, who's fighting?" And then she yells, "John, stop," multiple times. And at this point, the call is ended. She then makes a second call to 911 just 1 minute later. The first thing she says this time is, quote, "John Heminger is not supposed to be at this address, and he's here beating up one of my friends," end quote. The dispatcher asks who he's beating up, and you can hear Jessica yelling again, and it sounds like she's just yelling, "Stop," but then the call is ended again. She makes yet another call just 2 minutes later. She says, quote, "Okay, this is Jessica again. I am so sorry. Anyways, they were fighting outside. There were two guys. They were both Native, and they were on the front lawn, and I got scared. But I was running, and I told them I was calling the cops," end quote. The dispatcher asks if she knew them, and she says, quote, "Well, I don't know anything about them, I guess. But I mean, me and my kids were just walking in from outside, and they were fighting in the alley, and I was, like, screaming at them because I have kids, you know? It was like, you guys need to leave here. I don't even know," end quote. The dispatcher asks her if she knew where they went, and she says, "No, they just both started running." He then asks her again, "Did you know either of them?" And she says, "No." Then she says, "The cops are here." Two officers showed up, and according to the call entry, it reads, quote, "Spoke with Jessica. She stated she was coming home from work, and she stated she couldn't see who was fighting. She said they never said anything to her. Jessica stated one possibly was Rich, unknown last name, and she was not sure if John was there or not, as she couldn't see. She stated one was wearing all black, and one was wearing a white hoodie and dark pants. Unknown direction of travel. Individuals gone on arrival. Searched the area and couldn't find anyone matching the description. No report." Now remember, Jessica made those 911 calls around 6 p.m. and her last call says the two men are gone. After that, Jessica calls her sister Shannon. According to legal documents, Shannon says Jessica told her John had broken into the house and beat someone up. She says John came into her house, went upstairs, and beat the guy up in her bedroom. She says it looks like there's blood everywhere in her bedroom, and she tells Shannon she called the police and that they're looking for John, and that John and the other guy had left her house right after the fight. Shannon tells Jessica she needs to go to Safe Harbor because John's been beating her for the last 3 years. Now, Safe Harbor is a domestic violence shelter in Aberdeen. Shannon says she thinks the other guy that was at Jessica's house was Rich, but she's not sure. Jessica also tells Shannon that the night prior, John had called her from a restricted number and said he was going to go to Rich's house and kill Rich and his mother. Shannon and Jessica must have ended their conversation at this point, and then Jessica calls her back around 9:30 p.m. and ends up talking to Shannon's boyfriend, Tyler. She tells him that she's just going to go to bed. And according to Aberdeen News, Tyler says things just seemed to be fine. But they weren't fine, because 4.5 hours later, at 2:02 a.m., a fourth call is made to 911. But this time, it's not Jessica. It's John. He says, quote, "I'm on my way to the hospital. I got stabbed. I need someone to go check out my ex-girlfriend and my kids, because the guy that did it was still there when I left," end quote. The 911 dispatcher asked who stabbed him, and John says, "Richard Hanley." Police get to Jessica's house for a second time, and on the Raw Terror episode, they're walking around the house looking in the windows, and on the body cam footage from one of the officers, he says, quote, "There's a little girl sitting on the steps at the back. There's a 3-year-old girl sitting on the steps right now. There's a bunch of blood at the bottom of this step," end quote. According to Capital Journal, Officer Brad Wolf says he was one of the first officers on scene, and it may have been his body cam footage that was on the Raw Terror episode. He says he looked in a front window and he saw a little girl with apparent blood stains near a large blood spatter on the floor. He immediately gets permission to kick in the door, and they call out for Richard to come out with his hands up. They see two little girls with blood on their clothes and crying. Jessica's 2.5-year-old daughter was walking around, and her 9-month-old daughter was laying on a sofa. Both girls were splattered with blood. As officers are walking through the house, one of them says, quote, "We got a body down back here, still breathing," end quote. It's Jessica. They call for medics and say, quote, "Advise the medics, a lot of blood," end quote. One of the officers can't believe what he's seeing and says, "Oh my God." Jessica was on the kitchen floor against a wall, barely alive and gasping for breath. She has multiple stab wounds to her head and neck areas, and her throat has been slashed. The officer tells her to keep her eyes open and to keep breathing. Jessica's 2.5-year-old daughter followed the officer into the kitchen to be by her mother. You can hear one of the officers on the episode telling the little girl to get back. Officers continued to search for Richard, but then realized that it's only Jessica and the two children in the house. One detective ends up arriving on scene at Jessica's home, and two others go to the hospital after her. According to the Raw Terror episode, Detective Sergeant Chris Gross is one of the detectives at the hospital, and this is at about 4 a.m. He says, quote, "The individual that was in the next room to Jessica Goble was a guy named John Heminger. He had come in with a cut-up hand," end quote. And detectives obviously know that John is the one who made the 911 call to check on Jessica. So detectives interview him to find out what happened. And this is John's story. He says that he had a friend drive him to the ER because he had been attacked by Jessica's new boyfriend, Richard Hanley. Detective Gross says he doesn't know John Heminger, never came across him before, but when John tells him the name of Richard Hanley, that is one he does recognize. He says he knew Richard when he was a kid, and he always had run-ins and was actually currently on parole. According to court documents, Detective Gross says John told him that he and Jessica had been talking all day, and the plan for that day was that Jessica was going to come to his sister's house, where he was currently staying, and that she was going to spend the night with him. But he says he ended up going to one of his friend's houses instead. Oddly enough, a friend who lives only a couple houses down from Jessica. He says he then got a call from Jessica while he was at his friend's house. She said Richard and someone else were fighting by her house. She then says she's going to take the kids and get out of there, so since no one will be home, he should be able to come and get his work pants, because they had that no contact order in place. And a little while later, she sends him a text that says, "Be careful because cops are patrolling everywhere since Richard and this other guy got in a fight earlier." John walked from his friend's house to Jessica's and found that her back door was open. He said this was either 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. He noticed that there were no lights on in the house, so he goes inside, goes upstairs to the bedroom where Jessica told him his work pants were, and he starts looking for them in a pile of laundry. But just then, the bedroom lights turn on. It's Richard. And Richard says, quote, "What the fuck are you doing here? I'm the new man of the house," end quote. And he tells Richard, "Look, I don't want any problems. I'm just here for my work clothes." They end up in a fight, and he punches Richard in the eye area, and Richard falls on the bed and starts bleeding. Richard then gets up and takes a knife from his pocket. John says he ran to try to get away from Richard, but he missed one of the steps while coming down the stairs, ends up falling, and ends up on his back. Richard then gets on top of him and tries to stab him, but John says he blocked it with his hand, and that's how his hand got cut up. He says he was then able to poke Richard in the eye with his thumb, which caused him to crawl back. John then runs into the bathroom, grabs some gauze for his hand, and then runs to get his shoes and takes off out the door. He ran back to his friend's house, but the door was locked. He says he stayed there for actually like 10 to 15 minutes, waiting to see if his friend was home and would eventually come to the door. He calls his friend, but it just goes to voicemail. So then he calls another friend who does answer and ultimately gives him a ride to the hospital. It was noted in court documents that John referred to his cell phone multiple times, wanting detectives to look at messages and phone calls between him and Jessica. He wanted to show that things were fine between them, and he says these messages prove that. So detectives agree to look at his phone, and at no time does he object to this. And it was noted that there was a red substance on his phone that appeared to be blood. One text from Jessica reads, "I covered your ass. The cops are searching the alleys." The detectives question John about the text, and he just says he has no clue. But they don't let it go. They continue to ask him if he and Richard got into the altercation when Jessica made those 911 calls around 6 p.m., and he denies being at her house at that time and denies doing anything to her. Now again, Jessica is in the hospital room right next to John, and she's fighting for her life. She had been stabbed at least 23 times in the liver, torso, her back, head, and neck. These included fractures to her skull, penetrating her brain, and slashing her throat. According to the Raw Terror episode, Shannon recalls seeing Jessica in the hospital. She says Jessica still had blood on her and she had a lot of bandages on. She was hooked up to multiple machines and had tubes in her. Now, as you can imagine, her sister can't believe what she's seeing. She just saw Jessica a couple days before and they were having a good time. Now she's fighting for her life. This is also when Shannon learns that John is in the hospital after allegedly being attacked by Richard. Shannon says, quote, "In my mind, I was thinking, like, it could have been Richard or John that could have stabbed Jessica," end quote. Detectives continue with their investigation at the hospital and get DNA from John and Jessica to figure out whose blood is where in the house. While this is going on, detectives get some news about Jessica. They find out about her 911 calls that were made the night prior. Before this, detectives only knew that John called 911 claiming that Richard had stabbed him and is worried about Jessica. They didn't know that Jessica actually made 911 calls prior to that. So now they know that there is a connection between Jessica's calls and the call that John made. But now where is Richard? Every officer is on the street looking for him. Detective Gross ends up calling Richard's mother and tells her, "If you hear from Richard, have him call me immediately." And Richard actually does call him. He says he's on an Indian reservation, and unfortunately, Detective Gross says they don't have jurisdiction on an Indian reservation, so they need to get him off the reservation. He tells Richard, "I need you to meet with me." And Richard says, "Well, I'm afraid to come back because I'll just get locked up. How about you come to the reservation to talk to me?" Richard knows that way he can't be taken off the reservation. So Detective Gross agrees and drives to the reservation to meet with Richard. When Detective Gross gets there, Richard gives him his clothes that he was wearing during the stabbings, and Richard agrees to a DNA sample. Detective Gross says Richard was in pretty tough shape. You could tell that he had been in some sort of altercation. He was also crying over what had happened to Jessica. He didn't know that she was stabbed, and he kept asking, "How is Jessica? Did anything happen to her? When can I see her?" The detective tells him that she's literally fighting for her life right now, and it's not looking good. At this point, Richard completely loses it and starts crying uncontrollably. Detective Gross asks Richard what happened that night. And this is Richard's story. He tells something completely different than John. He says John actually attacked him. According to court documents, Richard says he had been seeing Jessica since early December of 2014, and he'd been seeing her while she was still with John too. Jessica told Richard that John would beat her up all the time and that she wanted to get away from that. Around 4 p.m. on January 6, Jessica sends him a text saying she got off work early and was at home and that he could come over. Now, Richard says he had a suspicion that some of Jessica's neighbors who knew John were actually informing John of every time that he was there, because somehow John always seemed to know. So at about 6 p.m., Richard's mom drops him off at Jessica's. And on the way there, Richard sees a coworker of John's, so he asks his mom to drop him off at the corner so nobody would see him go to Jessica's. But for whatever reason, his mom drops him off in the alley instead. He walks inside Jessica's house and locks the door. He says Jessica was inside changing the babies, and John kept calling her and texting her over and over. John saying he wants to be with her and that he's cried over her, and he says he knows somebody is there with Jessica, meaning Richard. John calls again, but Jessica ignores his call. But then she asks Richard, should I just call him back to make sure he doesn't show up? And they both agree, so she calls John back and puts their 2.5-year-old daughter on the phone. Jessica and Richard then have sex while her daughter is on the phone with John downstairs. A little while later, they hear the doorbell ring and they hear someone pounding on the door. Jessica tells Richard she thinks it might actually be the police because she thinks she might have a warrant out for some missed payments of some sort. So she goes downstairs to answer the door. Richard says he immediately hears someone say, "Is he here?" And that someone was John. And then he heard what he believes may have been John actually shoving Jessica. Jessica is shouting for John to leave, but he goes upstairs and sees Richard. Richard is holding John and Jessica's 9-month-old baby at the time, so he puts the baby down and John just starts hitting him. Jessica grabs the baby and says, quote, "John, not in front of the kids. These are your girls, not in front of the girls," end quote. Richard said he's trying to fight back, and John ends up kind of winded and out of breath, so he was able to throw John on the bed and tried to choke him. John bites Richard's arm and starts gouging his eye. He was able to jump off the bed and shove John down, and then John says to him, quote, "Leave my fucking girl alone, this is my girl," end quote. Richard shouts back, "All right, I'm leaving," and runs down the stairs as fast as he can. He runs out the door so fast, obviously afraid of John, that he doesn't even stop to grab his shoes. And he knows he has to get to the hospital because of his injuries, but he doesn't want to go here because the cops would probably be looking for him because he says he has a warrant. I never found out what the warrant was for, but he does say he had a warrant out. He ends up getting a ride from his mom to an ER on the reservation 3 hours away. And when he left Jessica's house, he also left his cell phone behind. Once they reached the reservation, his mom ended up getting a text from Jessica's phone that said, "Hey, is Rich with you?" So Richard messages her back and says, quote, "Yeah, I'm okay. How are you? Are you okay? Are the babies okay?" End quote. But he never gets a response back. Obviously worried that something happened to Jessica, he tries calling her, but her phone is off. And at this point, they arrive at the hospital on the reservation. He says after being discharged from the hospital, he and his mom stayed at a casino hotel on the reservation. The detective tells Richard there's a lot of blood in the house and asks if any of the blood would be his. And he says the only place that there would be blood would be where John had attacked him and the path that he took when he ran out of the house. Now, Detective Gross is kind of at a crossroads here. He doesn't really have any reason to not believe Richard because he says of all the times he's came across Richard in the past, he's never lied to him before. Detectives need to get to the bottom of this. Who is telling the truth and who stabbed Jessica? Detective Gross interviews John's sister, Krista, who John was supposedly staying with. She shares that about 9:45 p.m. on January 5th, the day before the altercation between John and Richard, she got a text from Jessica asking if John could bring her PlayStation and EBT card. Krista says she didn't tell John about the text because she just wanted to stay out of their business. Then between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m., John grabbed his clothes and said he was going to spend the night at a friend's house. She says John and Jessica were seeing each other even though they had this no contact order in place, and that they had actually been arguing a lot recently. She says the last time she saw John was when he left her house on January 5th. Now detectives are interested in the texts and phone calls between John and Jessica. And as I mentioned earlier, John was adamant that detectives look at his phone to see proof that he and Jessica were on good terms. So they get a search warrant and look further into his phone and extract the data. The messages made it clear that John knew about Richard and was very angry about it. Several text messages between John and Jessica were found that had actually been deleted. Some of the texts were from John accusing Jessica of cheating on him with Richard, and some were from Jessica accusing John of cheating on her. Jessica tells John, "I'm done with you," and he sends her a message talking about headhunting for Richard. John asks Jessica numerous times if he can come over. John sends her a text about how many days are left until the no-contact order is over, and Jessica sends him a text threatening to call the cops. One message that was found was from John on the day before Jessica was stabbed. He threatened to come to her house, kick down the door, and quote, "kill the dude with you now," end quote. This makes John look pretty suspicious, and something even more suspicious happens. While at the hospital, John agrees to let the detectives take his clothes that he was wearing, so they get him some other clothes to change into. He hands his jacket over that he was wearing, and as a detective is searching it, she hears and feels what appears to be some change in a pocket, and it's protocol to take inventory on anything found in any clothing. So she puts her hand in to dig out the change, but she doesn't just find change in his pocket. There's a knife handle. No blade, just a handle. The knife handle appeared to have some blood on it, and it seems that it had been cleaned, or at least someone tried to clean it. Detective Gross then meets with John after finding out about the knife handle. According to the Raw Terror episode, he asks John, quote, "What will we find if we send this in for testing and it comes back with Jessica's blood?" end quote. And he basically just says he doesn't know, it wasn't him. They ask him why there's a knife handle in his pocket, and he just says he has no idea. Maybe it fell in there somehow, but it's not his. He has no idea how it got there, which is pretty typical of a criminal to say. Now, after the handle is found, that's the end of the interview. John gets a lawyer after that. Now, there isn't enough evidence to arrest John at this point. Sure, it does look suspicious that he had a knife handle on him and a knife was clearly used to stab Jessica, but it wasn't enough. Back at Jessica's home, there are still detectives searching for clues. So, Detective Gross, again at the hospital, sends a picture of the knife handle to one of the detectives at Jessica's house. And almost immediately, he gets a text back with a photo attached. It's a picture of a knife blade. No handle, just a blade. The blade was found by a sink at Jessica's, and it was obvious that it had been cleaned. Now, this makes John look really, really bad. But again, they can't arrest him just yet. They still need to look into Richard more. So remember, Richard claims that during Jessica's stabbing, he was 3 hours away at an ER on a reservation, and that after that, his mom took him to a hotel there. So detectives need to verify his alibi. They get medical records from the ER on the Indian reservation, and they do verify that Richard was there at the time he said. And detectives check out surveillance footage from the hotel to verify his story as well. So it is 100% evident that Richard isn't the one who stabbed Jessica. Detectives also get some interesting information from John's friend's girlfriend, who John was staying with just a couple doors down. She says the night of January 6th, when Jessica made those 911 calls, she was home, and when John got there, he was very agitated, and he was upset with Richard and Jessica. He told her about the fight that he had just had with Richard, and he says to her he had, quote, "fucked him up," and that he was going to fuck them both up, end quote. So this clearly means he intends to go back to Jessica's and harm her too. Detectives then go back to John's friend. They ask if they can search his house and property, and he says yes. They show him a picture of the knife handle and asks if he recognizes it, and he says it's from his knife. He says the knife was in his utility room, and when they go in the utility room, of course, the knife isn't there. At this friend's house, detectives also find a garbage bag with clothes, work boots, and a towel that had blood on them. The friend identifies the clothes as belonging to John. He says the last time he saw John, he was wearing those clothes. Now detectives believe that they have enough evidence to arrest John, so they go back to the hospital to confront him. They tell him they know that he's lying about what happened, that Richard never attacked him. So they say, "You need to tell us the truth. Why did you do this?" And he just refuses to talk. So on January 7th, the same day that he called 911 to report he'd been stabbed, they arrest him on attempted murder charges. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Jessica is fighting for her life. According to a Facebook page that was created for Jessica, called Justice for Jessica Goebel, on January 10th, a post was created that said, "Update on Jessica. Jessica is still on life support. She is stable. Vitals are good." Then, later that day, another update came. It says, "Update on Jessica. Nurses took Jessica off sedation. She was responding to the pain. She did not open her eyes. She is back on sedation, but a lower amount." Even later that same day, another update comes. It says, "Update on Jessica. Jessica is resting. The nurses will not be reducing sedation again until Monday or Tuesday. The nurses want her to rest. The time frame she is in since her injury is a peak time for brain swelling. Her ICP number, or intracranial pressure number, is running higher than they like." And then, on January 11th, the family got some heartbreaking news. A new post was made that says, "Update on Jessica. Unfortunately, this morning was a rough morning. This morning, Jessica showed signs of problems. She was taken in for a CT scan. Her CT scan showed dark spots on her brain, which showed that Jessica was having strokes. The doctor broke the news that Jessica is not going to recover from this. The doctors can perform surgery, but the outcome would still be the same. Jessica will not be able to live without life support. She will not be able to ever breathe on her own. She will not know who anyone is, and she would live with permanent brain damage. She will not be able to ever breathe on her own. She will not know who anyone is, and she would live with permanent brain damage. We are waiting for family and close friends to say their goodbyes. We will all say goodbye to our beautiful and lovely Jessica tomorrow, as she will be our loving angel." According to the episode of Raw Terror, Jessica's sister Shannon recalls when the doctors told them the bad news. She says, quote, "The doctors finally came in and told us that she had a skull fracture, and if she would even wake up, she might not know who any of us were or even who she was. So at that time, we all kind of went outside and decided if we wanted her to live that life or just let her go," end quote. Now, as you can imagine, her sister was pretty choked up when saying this. Jessica was her best friend, and now she had to make a decision like this. She goes on to say, quote, "So we decided that we would just let her go, and we wanted our family to come up and say goodbye. I took my mom to the side and I told her I can't stay here and watch her not be hooked up to a machine and not breathing, and that I needed to go home so I can take care of her babies like she wanted me to. And so I waited there for a while until everybody showed up. I stayed as long as I could. I told everybody goodbye, and that was the last time I saw her," end quote. After being on life support for 5 days, Jessica passed away on January 12, 2015, at just 26 years old. And John's attempted murder charge just got bumped up to first-degree murder, and that comes with a mandatory life sentence. John had stabbed Jessica, ultimately killing her, and tried to frame Richard, which didn't work because he wasn't aware that Richard wasn't even around. He was actually on the reservation 3 hours away. After he stabs Jessica, he had time to make up a plan. What's he going to do with his clothes? How is he going to pin this on Richard? The blade had broken off the knife because the attack was so violent. So he cleans the blade, leaves it at the sink, but forgets the handle in his pocket. And the blood from the knife does ultimately come back to Jessica's blood. John's trial is in August of 2016. He is 34 years old at the time and charged with first-degree murder, which, as I said, comes with a mandatory life sentence. But he could get the death penalty. However, Jessica's family decides not to pursue the death penalty. During the trial, Jessica's next-door neighbor of her duplex testifies. The neighbor says that at about 11:30 p.m., they heard a woman's high-pitched scream. Deputy State Attorney Chris White says this is when John was sticking his knife into Jessica. And after he stabs her, he tried to clean up all the blood that was all over the house. It was on the floors, the walls, and then he washed the knife blade in the kitchen sink. He then tried to make it look like Richard did this. So he put blood on shoes and a sweatshirt of Richard's that were left at the house. But again, unknown to John, Richard was 3 hours away. During his trial, John never takes the stand. He never gets cross-examined to find out why he did this. Shannon says, quote, "We didn't pursue the death penalty because we just wanted John to admit what he did, but he didn't even care," end quote. Prosecutors presented evidence that showed that DNA from both John and Jessica were found on the knife blade, but John's defense claims somebody else stabbed Jessica and that police actually botched the investigation. Even though John didn't take the stand, three witnesses were called by the defense. And according to the Capital Journal, defense attorney William Gertis told the jury that the prosecution didn't present enough evidence to prove that John was guilty of stabbing and ultimately killing Jessica. He says the prosecution ignored evidence that showed that someone else may have killed Jessica. Now, I don't know who this someone else would be, clearly not Richard. The defense attorney also argues that during the police investigation, there were inexperienced police officers and that they had made a decision way too early on that John was guilty. He goes on to say that the investigators only collected evidence that would support John being the murderer, not anyone else, that they discarded any evidence that shows somebody else could have possibly been the guilty one, and that they didn't follow any other possible leads. The defense also argues that John should be charged with a lesser charge of manslaughter, which is the result from heat of passion. So, even though John was being charged with first-degree murder, that charge included possible lesser charges of second-degree murder, first-degree manslaughter, and second-degree manslaughter. Now, a heat of passion killing is where a person kills someone in a fit of unpremeditated rage that they feel because of a certain circumstance. So in this case, it would be John stabbing Jessica after being so upset because she's with Richard, and that John stabbing Jessica was not premeditated. So basically, to sum it up, if the jury finds that this was simply a heat of passion killing and that it was not premeditated, he would be charged with manslaughter. But if the jury finds that this was premeditated, he would be charged with murder. During the closing argument from Deputy State Attorney Chris White, he talks to the jury and reminds them that Jessica was stabbed 23 times, which again included fracturing her skull, penetrating her brain, and slashing her throat. He argues that by John threatening Jessica through text messages and by him taking his friend's knife and stabbing her, that this shows premeditation, not simply heat of passion. And again, as I mentioned earlier, premeditation is required to be found guilty of first-degree murder. After 5 hours of deliberation, jurors come back with a verdict. John is found guilty of first-degree murder. After hearing the guilty verdict, John kind of slumps down a little and bows his head, and then he was allowed to meet with his family for about 20 minutes to say their goodbyes. He was then shackled and taken back to the jail. At John's sentencing hearing, he is sentenced to life in prison without parole. Now, of course, John tries to appeal for a new trial. According to court documents, he says evidence related to items taken from him when he was at the hospital should not have been introduced at trial. This is when detectives took his DNA, phone, and clothes, and when they found that knife blade. And again, according to detectives, he consented to them taking these items. But he says he doesn't consent. He also says the trial court incorrectly allowed evidence located at the place John was staying to be introduced at trial, that being his friend's house just a couple doors down from Jessica, where they found that bag of clothes. Law enforcement did not get a warrant from John's friend, but they did get his consent to search the property. John says he had a reasonable expectation of privacy at his friend's house. He also says that the 26 autopsy photos of Jessica that were shown in court were unnecessary and made the jury become biased against him. But ultimately, his appeal is denied. John will spend the rest of his life behind bars. According to Aberdeen News, Rebecca Nelson, who is a friend of Jessica's sister, says, quote, "Something should have been done. She called and asked for help and nothing was done," end quote. Now, as a reminder, Jessica made 3 calls to 911 before she was even stabbed. Someone doesn't just make 3 calls to 911 for no reason and then say, "Oh, never mind, it was nothing." Now, something that is just heart-wrenching to me, besides Jessica being brutally stabbed, and I'm not trying to downplay that at all, is the fact that her two young daughters were there when the attack took place. That just makes me sick. According to Aberdeen News, a woman from Piermont, South Dakota says, quote, "Something more has to be done in a situation like that. He did it in front of her two kids, and to know that her daughter was trying to wake mommy up afterward, it's heartbreaking," end quote. Another woman from Britton, South Dakota says, quote, "We know the cops were there 5 hours before it happened. There's anger about that. He should have been arrested then and never had an opportunity to do what he did," end quote. Shannon's boyfriend's mother says, quote, "We need support for Jessica and all the other Jessicas in the world," end quote. Jessica's sister has custody of her and John's two daughters, and her son is with his dad. According to the episode of Raw Terror, Shannon wrote a letter the day John got sentenced. It says, quote, "I will never forget what you had done to my sister. You took my sister away. At least you have your family to talk to still, and I will never get a chance to talk to her about her day. How could you have done this in front of your children and to leave them there? What kind of father does that? I hope you rot in prison. You killed a part of my life when you took her away," end quote. She also says, quote, "The only satisfaction I actually have is knowing that he's actually eventually going to die in there," end quote. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Homicide Hot Dish, and remember to stay tuned in on our Facebook page, Homicide Hot Dish, for when our next episode will be released.